I think that we're going to really look at how we can all find solutions for problems within the world, because the world is ever changing and sustainability is terribly important for everyone. And, you know, our industry is really quite sustainable.
The World Beyond. Michael Mack in his Emotioneers of Tomorrow. The Mack One Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Michael Mack here, the founder and CEO of Mack One. Welcome to the World Beyond. Our team at Mack One creates innovative theme park designs and media-based entertainment. We are the Emotioneers of Tomorrow. In this episode, my colleague Lukas Metzger will explore what the future of tomorrow holds. Let's dive right in.
Thank you, Michael. Today, we have a very special guest here in our studio, Amanda Thompson, OBE, the CEO of Pleasure Beach Resort in Blackpool. Amanda has been dedicated and involved IAPA member for many years. She was serving as the first European woman to hold the prestigious position of the IAPA chair. She is an inspiring figure in the amusement park industry with an impressive family tradition and a remarkable commitment to creativity and shows. Amanda, it's an honor to have you here today.
Well, thank you, Lukas. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to be here too. I can say that what's great about what you've just said about the family is that my father was also chairman of the association. So that meant there were two members of our family in and involved with IAPA. Also, my great-grandfather used to travel during Prohibition from the UK to America by boat, then by train to Chicago to talk about the industry in the UK. That's pretty amazing. And my grandfather put the I in IAPA because he was the first international member. So that's two more little facts for you.
That's super interesting. Actually, I didn't know about that your grandfather really was like the first non-American member.
Yeah, so he was.
It's super interesting. But before we dive a bit deeper into it, let's kick off with short four questions just to know each other a bit better.
One.
What do you think? What is your favorite ride at Pleasure Beach?
Well, I don't have a favorite ride at the Pleasure Beach because it sort of depends what mood I'm in. Because most people will say I'm really, really flimsy when it comes to coasters. I never used to be. I used to be a coaster maniac because all my holidays, I'd go with my father around parks all around the world and I'd be challenged to go on various coasters around the world. So I've been on an awful lot. I think today, if I had to choose a ride just to go on one ride, I'd go on Alice in Wonderland. But of course, I go on Icon, which is a Mack coaster, which I love.
Which is 2 weeks ago, I had the pleasure to attend the opening show of Hot Ice. So I also, in the day after, I went to Alice in Wonderland, which is lovely, lovely dark ride. Speaking about roller coaster, you know, today we have like the official opening of our Voltron Nevera coaster, the latest Mack Rides coaster.
Amazing.
Do you think you will join us for a ride in the evening?
Well, I think I might be tempted, yes.
So, three. Speaking about shows, what is your favorite show?
In the world?
In the world, yeah.
Do you know, I think when I look back on my career in show business, I think that I was lucky enough to go to the theatre at a very young age and mm-hmm. I was always taken to the theatre. So it was part of my life. So all types of shows. I used to love going to the ballet, to the Royal Opera House in London at Covent Garden. So I was always inspired by all different types of shows. But I think I remember the first Cirque du Soleil show that I ever went to. That was pretty mind-blowing. It was in a tent. It was in the 1980s. Now, that tells everyone how old I am. So that was a long time ago. So that was very inspirational. But I think more recently, I really loved Le Rêve at the Wynn Hotel. But that's sadly gone. Yes. I mean, COVID really did collapse quite a lot of shows around the world. But that was always my favourite show. And I really enjoyed that because it sort of took you to a different level of your imagination. And I like that. I really did.
I actually was like the week before the first lockdown, I was in Vegas and I really saw one of the last shows of this show, and it's really, really amazing. It's really sorry. I'm also very sorry it's gone. Yeah.
I really liked it because you felt the emotion of the performers. Yeah. No one was hidden by too much makeup or masks or anything. And I think it challenged the perceptions of show business because you had every different element in that show. It was an exciting show to watch, but it was also very beautiful.
Yeah. Four. When you think about the childhood, is there something like a childhood hero?
A hero.
A hero.
I think, well, at the time, I think my father was always my hero. And even from being a really young child, he was always great fun and great fun to be around. All his friends were fun. But, you know, I would say probably the hero that I had was possibly the industry, because I met so many exciting people when I was young. I was lucky to be able to travel from a very young age all around Europe and meet amazing people. And, you know, my father and Roland Mack were very good friends. So I've been around Europa Park all my life. And I'm very lucky that I've had all these experiences. Yeah. And I'm very grateful for that, because it really has been my life. But my first real experience of anything was my grandfather made me work when I was 7 years old on the pony ride we had at the park. And he made me do that because I was so desperate to have a pony. And all I wanted was a pony. Every little girl's dream is to have a pony or to dance or something. And I was lucky enough I could dance. So I used to go to dance class. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted was a pony. So I made my own dreams come true from a very early age. So I went to work in my summer holidays. And at the end of the summer holidays, I think in my head that it was all summer holidays. But in reality, it may have just been a couple of weeks. But to me, it was the entire summer holidays, 8 weeks. I looked after the ponies on this pony ride and cleaned them and cleaned the tack and everything. And my grandfather said, because it was my birthday at the end of the summer holidays, and he said to me, "You may choose a pony as payment." And so I went, oh. So I very quickly learned the value of work because I understood then that if you worked hard, you got what you wanted in life. So I think that was a very good life lesson.
Speaking a bit about Pleasure Beach, do you have a favorite spot where you just go and say, I just need 5 minutes to relax?
I try and create those areas around the park. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as I've created an area, I think of what I actually could do with that area. So that area then goes. I think I'm lucky because I've got a very nice office that looks out over the park. So my office is also a place of work, but also a place of calm too. And when you can't hear the sounds of the park, it's quite disturbing to me. So when we're out of season and you don't hear any noise, it's a place of solitude. So it's really nice, calming. It gives me a space to think. And also, that was my grandfather's office. It's also my father's office. So it brings a lot of the history around me. So I enjoy being there.
So you follow the footsteps of your father, grandfather and grandfather.
Yes.
So how has this family tradition influenced your career, and what does it mean for you to carry on with that?
Well, I just consider myself to be the sort of caretaker of the time. You know, it's very difficult when you work for a family business, because everyone tries to have a legacy and leave their mark and their footprint. But I think I'm lucky because I'm the first female to actually run the business. So I won't be compared to any of the people that have gone before me. And I'm also very lucky because my father never made me come to work in the industry. We were always allowed to do what we wanted. When we were growing up, I went to boarding school in Bristol, then to Oxford. I was at college in Oxford. And then I had the magical moments at Disney. They didn't last very long, my magical moments at Disney. And most people, it would be their dream to work for Disney. But I think at the time, it was the wrong place and the wrong time for me. So I wasn't there for very long. And so I escaped and I went back to the UK, and I was working in a jean shop in London on the King's Road. And I thought I was challenging everyone, being really a bit daring, doing something. My father thought I was still working at Disneyland in Florida, working at Epcot. But no, I was actually in London working in a jean shop, and then he found me. So I was then sent home. When he found me living in London, he was mortified that I'd done this. So I was sent home, and I was sort of locked in my bedroom at about 20, 21. 21 it was. And it's very odd to be sort of told off like that then. And I thought I'd been really adventurous and done my own thing. And he thought I'd let him down. And it was a conflicting time for me and for him. And we were always really good friends. And I idolized him. And he was so angry with me. But anyway, I set up something. He told me I had to think of what I wanted to do. And so I set up a Keep Fit studio. And at the time, Jane Fonda was big on aerobics. So that takes it back to those people that remember Jane Fonda and her leggings. But so I taught Keep Fit. And I had a Keep Fit studio that I had to pay. It was at the park and I had to pay my father rent like a concessionaire. And so I had this big studio and I worked hard. I can say I started work at 7 o'clock in the morning and I finished about 10 o'clock at night. I also taught at the prison, local prison, and at the football club and all the local hotels in Blackpool. So I was busy and I sort of made a good go of it. And I think my father actually forgave me for everything because he saw that I had an entrepreneurial spirit. So he then said, okay, he talked again. And he said, if you need to go back to London and live your life a little, you can go. So I was lucky enough to be able to go back to London and live. And I worked in the fashion industry then.
So you also served as the first European woman to lead IAPA. What were some of the biggest challenges and achievements during your time?
Well, I think, of course, most people will know when I served, it was during COVID. Yeah. So I didn't. Well, I think to be fair, I probably was a good person to put in that position because I'm lucky enough to have been able to see a lot of the world and experience so many parks around the world. So I had a very global view of what was happening. So I was very intent on keeping the association very buoyant, keeping everyone talking together. And I was on the phone early in the morning because I didn't have to go to work. Well, I wasn't allowed to go to work. For the first time ever, the law in the UK prevented me from ever going to my office. Even though I owned the business, I wasn't allowed to go because we had furlough and we'd never had that. We'd never experienced it before, but it prevented me from going because if I went to the office, then we would no longer have furlough. So I really had to stay away. So I found myself in a situation where I didn't have to get up in the morning and go to work, which was a bit strange, but my brain was flying at 90 miles an hour all the time. So I was on the phone to June Coe, who was at the time, she was in charge. She was vice president of IARPA Asia. Yep. So I was there speaking to her in the morning, speaking to Jacob Vahl, who was in charge of Europe at the time, and speaking to Hal McAvoy, who was in charge of America, North America. And also there was the South America, Paulina in South America. So I was talking to everyone all the time and working out ways that we could move forward, how we could influence the world and how we could all come out. Thankfully, everybody thought together, worked together very hard, and we managed really well on ways forward and out of it. We all talked, we all shared. No one had problems sharing their information. And that was great because it really shows what a tight family our industry is. So I think it did us all the world of good. And it gave us all a moment to stop, pause, rethink, reset, go again. And yes, it was really difficult, really troubling. And a lot of people didn't fare well because they might not have been lucky enough to work for a family business. When you work for a family business, I made the decisions and I chose to keep all the staff that I was employing. And I hoped that with furlough, everyone would understand that it would be different, it would be difficult, but we managed to get through it. But a lot of people that work for corporations lost their jobs, and that was very sad. And there were a lot of really good people from our industry that were floating around afterwards. But I think they're all now happily snapped up doing great new jobs. So I don't think too many of the really good people lost out. But it was a very, very difficult time for us all. But I think the industry has risen and it's sort of still rising. Yeah. Things are changing very quickly. And probably it was the time of biggest change for our industry with ticketing systems. Everything changed.
Yeah. And I really have the feeling that we as an IAPA, you know, I'm also have the honor to be highly involved within IAPA EMEA. I really have the feeling that we as an association, we left the COVID time stronger than we entered it before as an association, because there were so many networking opportunities, even online, everything was online. But we really saw the why is it important to stay engaged association? Why is it important to keep our industry together?
I think what we learned was how important communication was. Yeah. And whether you can be great at tech or not great at tech, because I'm really a technophobe. I mean, I'm hopeless, but I learned very quickly that a Zoom call was essential at that time.
Yeah.
But I think we all learnt that talking and sharing problems was the most beneficial part. And really, the association brought the world together for our industry. Yeah. And we all made friends, whether we'd met them or hadn't met them. We met people from all around the world, all sharing similar problems. And we all helped each other. And I don't think you get that in many industries. You don't get everybody reaching out and helping each other. And I think that's what makes our industry a friendly, fun industry to work in.
So it was my second term within the IAPA EMEA Education Subcommittee. And we had like each Friday, we had like a call. We didn't have any topics to talk, but just we did not have much else to do at home. So Massimiliano had the idea every Friday we meet us just for a drink. So we all came together for just like 30, 45 minutes to have a drink together. And really, it was a super bonding moment. And I really can tell, I can really call friends to many of these people out of this, out of that group.
Well, I agree, because it really brought us all together. Yeah. We shared experiences, whether they were to do with work or whether they were to do with what was happening with us personally at that time. And I think everyone helped each other. And I think that was really, it was a magical moment for us all. It really was.
Yeah. So, but Amanda, your passion for shows and live entertainment is very well known, even outside our industry. Can you tell us a bit more about founding Stageworks Worldwide Productions?
Well, I can, because I was talking about it only last night. And I think I sort of founded Stageworks when I was working in America, because we had an amusement park in Myrtle Beach, and the amusement park then was called Magic Harbour. And I was working there, and in the pub, we had an English pub, and my father came over and we had some shows there, and he didn't really like the ice show very much. And so he said, "I'm coming back in 2 weeks. I want you to change that ice show, Amanda." And I went, "Oh, I don't think I can do that." And he said, no, "You're going to do it. I'm giving you a job to do in the next 2 weeks. You can work in the pub in the evening. Mm. And then I want you to do that, changing that show." So I went, "But it's already cast. It's already open." I said, "Yes." And he said, "Yes, but you'll find a time when they can rehearse and you're going to change it." So I changed the music. And I remembered that we had some costumes in our wardrobe department back home. And so I had some costumes sent out. And I did. I changed it. And he came back and he said, "Well, not bad. You'll try harder next year." And so I went, "Try harder next year?" And he said, "Yes, you're going to do the shows here next year, all of them." So I had this amazing opportunity thrown at me. And I could have said no, I suppose, but I just didn't. And I was lucky because I really enjoyed going to the theatre. So I saw that as a challenge. And those people that know me know that I quite like to be challenged on things and I don't give up easily. So I thought, I'll do this. And it was great. And I was working at the time, I was working in London in the fashion industry. And so they allowed me to have a few weeks off to go and do the shows in America, and then I could come back and work for them. So I was lucky in the fact that I could do that. So I did that, and that's how Stageworks was born. And then I set up this company, and I created shows for people all over the world.
Yeah.
And that's how my passion for ice skating and producing ice shows started, because I was lucky enough to get my first, apart from being in Myrtle Beach, my first ice skating contract was, of course, here at Europa Park.
Right.
And I don't know why Roland said, "Okay, Amanda, you can do a show for me." And so I did 13 ice shows at Europa Park. And that was the beginning of my ice show career here in Germany. And then I went on and did shows all over the world, many different types of shows. But I did 13 years, magical years, actually, at Europa Park.
Ice show for us.
Yeah. I think the staff all hated me when I worked here because I had signs everywhere saying, "Do not enter." And everyone's so used to being so friendly here at Europa Park. Everyone was talking to everyone. Yep. And suddenly there were big signs all over in different languages. So they couldn't come into the theatre space that I was working in. Because I think probably people know that I'm quite fiery at times because I want things right. So I didn't want people to see how the magic was created. So.
So did everyone behave after the sign, or did someone try to get a sneak peek?
Well, clearly Roland came in, and but he always was allowed a sneak peek. And the wonderful Franz Mack used to come occasionally and sit and watch. Yeah. But he was intrigued by the whole process. So he came in. And, of course, Mr. Schultz came in once and never dared come in again after that. He came in once. And I think I really did scream at him, and he screamed back at me. And we had this great relationship. But he never came back in again after that. He only came on the first, on the preview night.
So, as you just mentioned, you know, there's a very close relationship between the Mack family and the Thompson family. How do you think did this friendship influence both businesses and both parks?
Well, I can say before the first hotel was built here at Europa Park, I remember Roland and my father sitting, talking about the challenges and deciding whether hotels was the way forward. And I think both of them sat there, and I'm sure Roland talked to millions of people, but I do personally remember my father saying, yes, this is really a good idea, and I think you should do it, and you're in such a great location, and it will be good. And I think the hotel's transformed the park here, because it's a huge, huge part of the business now. And really, I think Roland Mack and the family have created amazing hotels at Europa Park. They really provide what the guests want, and they have everything from luxury, style, spa, swimming pools, fun, everything that anyone could possibly want in a hotel, they've managed to create here. And it gives a magical experience for the Europa Park guests when they come here, because they don't get it anywhere else. And yes, you can go to Disney, you can go to Universal, but you tend to stay in more branded hotels there. And I think what's magical about Europa Park is everything wasn't built at once. And I think what's great about Europa Park is it has evolved over the years. So all the guests that come here are very loyal, because they've seen the changes over the years. So whether they were 4 and are now, I don't know, 34, they've grown up with Europa Park. And so they feel that they own it a little bit, because they've taken part and come back and visited and remained loyal. And I think what Europa Park has done is it's made people visit parks all over the world. So a lot of people become fans of Europa Park, become fans of Pleasure Beach, become fans of Tivoli or Liseberg or wherever they want to be. They become fans, and because of that, they share a common interest and want to go to all the other amusement parks, and particularly family-run parks. I think that they're very lucky, because they can make quick decisions. And if they want to build something, it's their money that they're using. So they build it quickly, because they want to see the change as quickly as possible. But I do believe that I was lucky to see 13 years of change. And what was exciting for me when I came here to produce the ice shows for the Mack family, what was really, really exciting for me was seeing the changes in the park. And I'd come in early at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd jump into Franz Mack's buggy, and he'd take me all over the park and show me what was being built and developed. And he didn't really speak much English. Well, in fact, he didn't really speak English. But we had a really good relationship, because I could see what was happening and how excited he was and the changes that were being made. And then Roland would take me on another buggy ride and show me other areas. And so I feel that I was really involved in those sort of great developing stages of the park. And it was really great, really exciting. So for me, I really feel part of everything that I've watched it secretly evolve over the years, which is magical for me.
But speaking about your projects and achievements, is there anything where you are the proudest of? I know it's a very difficult question.
I think what's nice that I've been able to do at Pleasure Beach is I've been able to develop the hotel side of things. And I like designing hotels.
Yeah.
And it's tough when you're doing it.
Yeah.
But it's a very creative process. And for me, creating nice spaces for people to stay, I enjoy doing it. I can do it. Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to build 2 hotels. They're very different hotels. And I have a third one in already sort of on the drawing board. But we have to find the funding to do that third hotel. But I think it will be a lovely hotel. So I can sneakily tell you where I hope it will be. I don't know whether it will be there, but this is top secret. And hopefully it will be near the white casino building at the entrance of the park.
Oh, okay.
Not inside it, but mm-hmm. near it. So I'm hoping that that's where we can build. But also I have in the pipeline, I want to do some apartments mm-hmm. that are connected to the Boulevard Hotel. So we can have apartments where people can bring their dogs and mm-hmm. bring their families and stay all together in a small apartment, but it will have the same style as the Boulevard. And but at the moment, I've got the space, I've got the buildings, mm-hmm. but I'm having a little bit of planning problems with the local council because they say I have to plant 60 trees. Well, I really find that a bit strange yeah. because Blackpool's on the seafront and yeah. trees don't like salt water. So I'm trying to find places in the park to plant these trees. But 60 trees is quite a lot of trees.
That's a huge amount, yeah. And as old I was there 2 weeks ago, I could not think about a space, but build 60 trees.
I'll have to find the space. I definitely will have to find the space because, oh, otherwise you have to pay per tree. So I think it's a tree tax. So I don't know. But if I'll find a way to do it and mm-hmm. eventually I will build those yep. apartments because I really want to. Because yeah. I've allowed dogs, people can bring mm-hmm. their dogs. Since COVID, I realized how important yeah. pets are to people. I mean, I can't allow everything. I can't, but I do allow people now to bring their dogs to stay in the hotels. We have certain rooms that we allow dogs in. Not all of them, but yeah. certain rooms.
As a dog owner, I highly appreciate that.
So. Well, I'm a dog owner too, but my dog comes to work some days, but I think she's decided she prefers being in the garden than being at work. So I don't blame her really.
Being a dog, I think I could understand that. So to conclude a bit our discussion, Amanda, I really would love to hear your thoughts on the future.
7 years from now.
Where do you think is the world of amusement parks is going to lead us in the next 7 years?
I think that we're going to really look at how we can all find solutions for problems within the world, because the world is ever changing and sustainability is terribly important for everyone. And, you know, our industry is really quite sustainable because we try to build things locally. We try to use things again, because as family business, I know that Roland will try and use things again and again, because he'll be a bit like my father and try and find new ways to develop things and reimagine things. And I think what we do is we reimagine what was great from our past. Now, that is sustainable in a way. And I think what we do is we make it better. And I think our industry is all about change, bringing in change and challenging people's perceptions. And we will continue to do that. Our industry changes all the time. I don't think there'll be any one thing that we will all aspire to. But I do think that sustainability is a global issue. Now, it means something different to everyone. Everybody thinks of sustainability in a different way. And I think we as an industry are actually very sustainable because we like to keep people working, which is sustainable for the surrounding economy. We try different ways of looking forward. And I think people coming back to our parks is also a sustainable vision for the future, because that means that they want to holiday in perhaps the country that they're in, or as you're lucky enough in Europa Park to have a big area to pull from. But, you know, I think our industry is very sustainable because it changes so much. And that means that we will have an industry for the future. And it's not all about how we can save this, save that. It's about making sure that we have a broader vision. And having a broader vision will be very important for all of us, and particularly family business, because I know that Roland Mack, Thomas and Michael and Frederick now and Jürgen and the whole Mack family, they really do have a broad vision, and they never stop thinking about how they can make this park so magical for the future. And it will always be one of the world leaders of our industry. And I can honestly say that all of you who work at Europa Park are lucky to have a family that backs the industry so much, because they really do wear their heart on the sleeve and deliver passion for this industry.
Amanda, it's been a huge pleasure and honor to have you here today. And thank you for your final words. I think there's nothing we could end the podcast in a nicer way.
Thank you, Lucas. I'm glad. It was an honor to be here.
Thank you very much for this conversation. And thank you to all our listeners. See you next time on The World Beyond.
Thank you for this inspiring exchange. Together as Emotioneers, we have once again gained fascinating insights and expanded the boundaries of the known. To all our listeners out there, remember that the world is full of undiscovered possibilities. Go out and shape our future. Until next time on The World Beyond.
Mac One presents The World Beyond. Brought to you by Micha Umak and his Emotioneers of Tomorrow.